Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Today on the Grave Talks, the haunted Myrtle's Plantation. When you buy a historic bed and breakfast, what's the first thing you think of? Cozy atmosphere, fresh eggs and coffee? The dead roaming the halls, reenacting their tragic death from hundreds of years ago? If you pick the latter, that was just one aspect of the haunting activity that would take place at the Myrtle's Plantation, according to Francis Kierman. For more than a decade, Francis owned and endured the spirits that resided on this historic site. Today, we hear her story of her experiences at the Myrtle's Plantation.
I think I was born into it. I'm a Swedish descent, but there was gypsies that also immigrated to Sweden. And I think I have gypsy heritage. It's in my DNA. So I wasn't adverse or opposed to it. However, when I bought the Myrtles, I had no idea that the house was haunted. It was the last thing on my mind. I was looking for a beautiful bed and breakfast in Louisiana. And it was shocking.
Sure. I bet. I mean, prior to you buying the Myrtles, what sort of interest had you ever had, any sort of experiences? Had you ever looked into ghostly things? What was there anything in that portion of your life prior to that?
It's not that I looked into it. It's just that we lived with another family in our house. And it was because I was so young, it was just a given. It wasn't even anything that we questioned. My sister and I might mention them, but I wasn't really seeking ghosts.
Sure. They were just kind of there. Tell me about that. Tell me about, you know, childhood, and tell me about, you know, what sort of experiences, what's your earliest memory of kind of having an experience?
Like I said, there was a family living in our house. There, you could tell it was the mother, the father, and a child. And they would coexist with us. It was a brand new house. So I'm not sure where they came from. And being so young, I just didn't question it.
So I know you say there was another family living there, but like specifically what was the moment where you realized this? Was there an encounter? Was there something that happened? When you look back in your memory, where were some of those first moments?
They were just moving around and sort of living their own life in our house. So there wasn't any communication. There wasn't, we didn't wave at them or anything like that. They were just sort of there doing their own thing.
What sort of signs did you have that they were there doing their own thing?
Well, we could see them. My sister and my parents saw them too.
You could actually see. It wasn't just, there was, you know, like some things being moved around. You could actually see them.
Yes.
Well, I mean, and I can tell for you, this seems just like a very normal thing, and you see the ghosts. It's obviously not for most people. put yourself in that perspective a little bit of someone who has never had an experience like that. How did you see them? What were they doing? What did they look like? I mean, how clear were these people to you and your family?
It wasn't like a negative, as far as the old photographs where you had the negative. They were, but they were probably not quite as crisp and concise as this reality is. And yet when you looked at them, you could see the features. They were the same height, similar heights as us. That's why we knew it was a father, mother, child, but they just weren't as clear and crisp as humans were.
Mm-hmm. What were your parents' reactions to this? I mean, this you moved into this house and you started seeing this other family. I mean, how did your family handle it?
I guess because my mom grew up in this Swedish family that had gypsy blood, that my family just takes it for granted. They didn't see anything strange about it. And I'm lucky because I know from talking to a lot of my friends that as soon as your parents tell you, oh, you didn't see anything or you're crazy, you kind of block that off. So I was able to continue to see them all my life.
So this continued throughout your whole time living there, throughout childhood. Did other people see this family in your house, or was it limited to just your direct family?
My best friend could see them, but nobody else.
Really?
Or at least nobody ever told us. Maybe mm-hmm. they didn't want to admit it. I don't know.
Sure. I mean, was it something that was openly talked about with others, or was it kind of just within your family you kind of kept it under wraps? You know, because others may not be so open to the idea.
I don't think we ever discussed purposely keeping it a secret, mm-hmm. but we just didn't discuss it except with my best friend. Oh, this is kind of cool. Look at that.
What's that? Oh, I get you. Okay. Saying like, oh, there's the ghost. There's
right.
Yeah. Yeah. There's experiences. When you were having, I mean, it sounds like it was just very normal from a very young age. That's why it doesn't really, I guess, stand out all that much of specific incidents. Were there any specific moments or times, or was this like a daily occurrence just as regularly as you saw your mom and your dad and your sister?
Sort of in between, but we'd see him, you know, every week, every few days we'd be able to see them.
Did you ever wonder who they were, or do you have any inklings as to who they were? You said it was a new house.
Yeah, we don't know who they were. So, and we never pursued, you know, actively, I guess you call it investigating or researching who they were.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you've ever been curious about as an adult to look into at any greater length?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, at the Myrtles, we kept a record of every single sighting by us and the guests and anybody else. And over time, we discovered that some of the spirits were specific to a specific date of the year. Some of them were specific to a season of the year or a specific room or mm-hmm. attached to a certain person. So there's so many different varieties, but we were able to ascertain a lot of that and by keeping the logs.
I'm just curious if you'd ever dug into it on your old home from childhood.
No, we never did.
Interesting.
It was an orchard, so I really don't know why they were there.
Had there been a different home on the property prior?
That's possible. I don't know.
Sure. Being an orchard. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm just wondering if, you know, it was an old homestead or something, and then there's a new building on it or something. And
that makes a lot of sense. I mean, why else would they be in our house?
Oftentimes that's what you have with people being attached to the land. Well, let's move up to the time where you decide to take on the Myrtles, and you're initially thinking this will be a good bed and breakfast. Nothing spooky, not going for ghosts or anything like that. I mean, what was it like? And tell me about the journey into finding the Myrtles to begin with.
My husband and I were on a cruise to Jamaica and Haiti, and we met another couple, and they were going to be stopping in Louisiana on their way back. And did we want to go with them? And we said, sure. I had an inkling that, you know, someday wanted to buy an inn, you know, and retire. I was very young. I was in my 20s. So they had to go home, and we had some extra time. And I said, let's just see what real estate costs in Louisiana. Let's just look around and, you know, for the future. And we get to St. Francisville and decided to see a realtor and just, you know, sort of pretend we're in the market when we really weren't. And she showed us a few places, and I said, well, we're looking for something bigger and older. And she said, I have the perfect place. I'm the only person in the office and probably in St. Francisville that even knows it's for sale. It's called the Myrtles. And my world stopped. I had a clue right then. I don't know. It's hard to explain. But I sort of, even having not seen it, I had a feeling about it.
Interesting. Like, what, describe that feeling as best you can.
It's kind of like the world skipped a beat, or it takes your breath away. I just had a knowing that this was something big in my life.
Mm-hmm. So you get there eventually to take a look at it then?
Yes.
And what was it like as you walked through the state of the location? What was it like going through there for the first time?
Driving up was awesome. Here's this gorgeous antebellum home, and it's stately and huge, and the graceful ironwork. It wasn't like a lot of plantations with the columns. This one was very graceful, and we went in and met the owner. He called me Sarah. And
interesting.
He said, I'm so sorry. I know your name's Francis.
Yeah.
And then people in town started calling me Sarah. Nobody knew me from Adam. Here I am, this tourist from California. But
yeah.
Walked through the house, and it was lovely. And I thought, oh, this is really nice. And then we go into the game room, and he opens the back door to the back staircase. And there was this gust of wind. And I put my head through the door, and I recognized it. And that was it.
When you recognized it, explain to me, obviously, when you have those feelings, it's a feeling because you've been there before, because you've had those experiences, or you've had a time there. Explain to me what that recognition felt like, knowing, you know, consciously that you, as Francis, have never been there before.
Right. I opened the door, and I the gust of wind, and I stuck my head in the door, and I knew that place. I knew I had been there before. It was an eerie feeling that I knew this place from before.
How did things progress from there?
I knew in that moment that we were going to buy it, and we were talking, and it, I think by then the owner brought out sherry. So we're having a sip of sherry. And when we would laugh, I would hear a room full of people laughing, not just, you know, the six of us, but a whole party going on. Mm-hmm. And it would last a few seconds after we would laugh. And then I had a woman call my name, Frances. And I looked over, and the only other female was the real estate agent. And she was involved in another conversation, so it wasn't her. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. And eventually, with this little tiny stuff going on, I asked the owner, is there something you need to tell me about this house? He goes, well, what do you mean? I said, well, could it be haunted? He said, oh, absolutely not. And, you know, he made me feel like I was kind of,
yeah.
How dare I ask? But so I didn't think much more about it. And then we learned that he had told his staff and everybody not to talk about the ghost because it was well known it was haunted. But I had no idea coming from California.
So. Sure. Sure. And I'm assuming at the time we're not talking about being able to Google this and just find the information as easy as one could today.
No, this is the 80s.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. It's not unless you know where to find that information, or I suppose ask around town a bit, you know, maybe you could get some info, but not just, right. You know, 2 seconds, pull out the phone. There's your answer. Right. What was your husband's experience initially while you were having all of those moments in the house at that same time?
He tolerated me. He didn't believe at all.
Okay.
At that point. he learned, but no, at that point, you know, I'm just a little quirky.
Mm-hmm.
He loved me.
Were you, the feelings you had, the feelings of familiarity, the wondering, you know, if it's haunted, but not necessarily having a ghostly encounter yet, more so just the those feelings of kind of comfort, right, and familiar and familiarity, were you getting anything negative, or was it more like, you know, essentially that warm, cuddly feeling of, you know, this is the right place for me to be?
Yeah, totally warm, cuddly. There was no way I couldn't have bought it at that point. It just was so natural, and I felt like I was home. Like my past had caught up with my future, and I was exactly where I was supposed to be.
So you are feeling you want to buy this place. You're having these experiences. You're talking, you know, with the real estate agent and such. How quickly did you make the call of, this is the place that we're going to be buying?
My husband knew right away. You know, we played the negotiation game. But mm-hmm. And the odd thing is that it was way beyond our budget, but it was practically handed to me on a silver platter. I mean, it all just worked out like it was supposed to.
So you buy the place, and tell me about what it's like as it's now in your possession. Everybody has the first day going into the property that you now own. Take us there.
Oh, it was during the pilgrimage, and the owner, John L., had guests over, and everything was jovial and merriment and fun. He kept giving us alcohol, and I'm not a big drinker. Mm-hmm. But my first night, he put me upstairs in the suite, and by then he had told me about some of the history, so I knew there was a Sarah. He said, that's Sarah's suite, and that's where I'll be staying. He was sleeping downstairs. And so I wasn't nervous at that point. And I get in bed. I turn out the light, get into bed, and I wake up, and the lights are on. And I thought, well, that's weird. I must have forgotten to turn the lights out. So I turn out the lights and get back in bed, and I wake up again, and the lights are on. And I said, well, this is kind of weird, but... And then I hear footsteps coming up the stairs, and I thought, oh, this is just the, you know, the other company that's staying in the house that night. And then they get up all the way up to my door, and my doorknob starts rattling, at which point I became concerned, but I'm still thinking, okay, you know, it's Francis, someone's in this room, you know, go away.
Yeah.
And nobody answered. And I'm starting to think, this is really weird because the doorknob's rattling. And so I got out my courage and I opened the door. There was no one there. I grabbed the pillow, ran downstairs, and slept in the room next to the owner. Because I'm starting to think, well, this is a little weird. I make my bed on the couch and fell asleep. I woke up. Because there was light in the room, and standing over me was a black woman. She had an old-fashioned tin with a loop in it and a candle in it, and that's how I could see her. And she was in a long green dressing gown. Her head was wrapped in a turban, and I lost it. I started screaming my head off. And it felt like I was screaming for an hour. I was probably only screaming a minute or two. And I really thought the owner would come save me. He was in the next room, but he didn't. So gradually, I got a little bit of nerve up, and I realized that she wasn't really there, that she was a ghost. And I reached out to touch her, and my hand passed through her. And as it did, she disappeared. And I sat up the rest of the night. I was too scared to go back to sleep.
So when you initially had this experience and you started screaming, were you thinking this was a living person that had come into your room?
That was one of my big fears when I was there. But I think maybe for a second I thought that, but pretty quickly I realized she was a ghost. And especially because of the old time outfit.
I mean, the reaction is interesting because obviously you grew up in having experiences and seeing these people. So I guess I'm a little bit surprised that your reaction is screaming and being scared. But of course, it is a completely different environment than where, you know, you grew up. So having that sort of a reaction. Yeah, exactly. So explain to me this, because you had said the owner, this is the moment, this is prior to you buying the property. Is that right?
Right. There was a few days when he was there and I were there together before we closed and right after we closed the.
Okay. So you guys just kind of cohabitated for a couple days to make the transition, essentially.
And so he could teach me the tour and tell me about the history and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. So when you had that experience and then let's say, okay, you have the experience the next day, you get up, you see the owner. Do you explain what happened?
Absolutely. And he laughed at me and he said, oh, Francis, don't be ridiculous. And okay.
So he was still playing it up as he was playing the role that he played before the transaction even happened, where you said, is there anything you need to tell me about this place?
Exactly.
He was going through it still, no matter what. He's playing the card of this is not haunted.
Well, we hadn't closed the deal. Maybe he was afraid I would back out.
Okay, sure. So you have that experience. The deal was not quite closed yet. What's going through your mind at that point?
Well, I knew I saw what I saw, but I just felt like I wasn't going to get any support from him, and I was all alone, and I wouldn't get any support from my husband.
So are you
so feeling? So I just feel a little bit isolated. But a week later, we went out to lunch with his mother, and the very first thing she says to me is, oh, John L. tells me you saw the ghost in the green turban. That's just so exciting. And I thought, busted.
Oh, wow.
So he did know what was going on.
And how did he react?
I think he was a little embarrassed at that time. I don't know. He didn't say anything.
Yeah. I could see that being a little bit awkward, where it's like, okay, so you got some validation there that, yes, he obviously knows the place is haunted, but he doesn't want anyone else to know. So walk me through some more of the beginnings there of either that week as you're kind of learning the tour and all that, or as things progress on to your ownership even further down the line.
Well, first off, let me tell you that he was leaving to join a silent monastery.
Interesting.
Something rattled him so bad that he joined a silent monastery.
That's not usually like just a random choice that one makes later in life. Let's go do that.
Exactly. I know.
Yeah.
So, and I would talk to some of his friends that would come by, you know, that I had gotten to know. And little by little, I was able to piece together a lot of the ghost stories, and that it really was haunted. One of the best sources was the housekeeper, Lily May. She'd been with the house through four owners for about 30 years. Mm-hmm. So at first she was reluctant to talk about it, but especially after John L. left, she started telling me this incident and that incident. There was a place on the floor in the entry hall where one of the sons of the owners had died, and she couldn't buff over that spot. She buffed the floors at least a few times a week, and you know, the buffer goes smoothly over everything, you have the polish on it, and when she'd get to this one spot, it would just be like running into a wall in the middle of the room, and it was in the shape of a body. Yeah. And she said that her son was upstairs one day with her, and a broom chased him down the stairs. And then she went downstairs, and it was as if somebody had dropped a bucket of dirt at the base of the stairs. And her son had run out and left the house. But when she asked him about it, why did you bring dirt into the house? Oh, Mama, I didn't bring dirt. You know, that wasn't me. Mm-hmm. And somehow, like a bucket of dirt, a big bunch of dirt was in the middle of the entry hall at the base of the stairs.
How bizarre.
Stairs.
So the...
And she's... Yeah. She said, oh, we hear things and see things and they just don't talk about it.
The body that was, or the place where they could not use the piece of equipment, yeah, where that body was, what sort of experiences? I mean, that's a dramatic one. That's a very interesting one. After you had learned that, what did you learn about the individual who had died there?
He was one of the Sterling sons. And I did a lot of research. It was wonderful in those days because I could go to the newspaper office and they had every issue, every newspaper from the 1600s, just on shelves and shelves and shelves. It was fabulous. You know, nowadays it's all on microfiche, but I actually could access the hard copies. And I was able to piece a lot of things together also from the courthouse and from the people who put the house on the National Register. So I was able to learn a lot of the history. And the Sterlings had, I think, 8 sons, and a couple of them died while they owned the property. The story goes that Lewis was shot in the dining room and walked into the entry hall and died.
Wow. I mean, this is an interesting... Obviously, we're talking about a place with a lot of history, many generations coming and going, and not always the brightest of times in history where the house is, right, is very active. So I'm sure that was just probably one of, you know, many not so, you know, happy endings, if you will.
Oh yeah.
For people that had been on the property. So you having this experience, you know, you learn about the body that was there, the bit of the history. Are you still having the warm and fuzzies about the place that you did from the beginning?
That's a fair question. I just, you know, my friend came and became the curator, and he worked for me. And we would always sleep in an adjoining room and leave the door open between us. I never had to be alone. Mm-hmm. But even so, you know, we might laugh and joke about it during the day. Ha ha. What did you see? But once it got dark, we never talked about the ghosts. You just don't when you have to live there. The guests, you know, come, but the tourists, I should say, but they get to go home. Mm-hmm. But we really didn't talk about it with the tourists. At that time, it was not popular to have ghosts, especially in a fundamental Baptist pocket in the South. You, yeah, did not talk about the ghosts. So we tried to keep it secret. And in those days, in the 80s, we thought, who's going to come and stay in a haunted house? Nowadays, you've got to have a ghost, right?
Exactly.
But in those days, it was totally different.
Yeah, today it's a selling point.
Right.
Yeah. So you said that you always kind of tried to keep, you know, someone there with you. Were there times, though, where inevitably you were just there by yourself?
Way down the line, there was times, and not very often. But I used to call a list of guests that I'd become friendly with and say, hey, if you come, I'll give you a free night. You know, I used to try to bribe people to come stay, and usually it worked. So yeah, there was probably maybe 2 or 3 nights in my life there, in my time there, that I was all alone. And it was one of them was the most frightening day of my life, probably. Me and my puppy dog were in our private area, and I heard footsteps coming up the back gallery, and it was definitely men's footsteps, heavy footsteps. Then I hear the double doors in the entry hall just bang open, and by then I have the phone, and I'm, you know, I they didn't have 911 there, but about to dial the police, and Then they walked into the entry hall and I could hear the voices. And then they're rattling the door into my private area. And I jumped off the bed and hid under the bed. My puppy dog came under the bed with me and I passed out.
I don't blame you.
I didn't wake up till the morning.
When you're having an experience like that, and you said this was further down the line, is that right?
Right, yes.
Okay. Was there ever a point where you were like, you know, I love this place, but this is a lot. This is a lot to handle.
Well, the entire time that I was hiding and that I was hearing this, I was saying to myself, please be a ghost. Please be a ghost.
Sure, yeah.
I thought it was real people. Okay. And that can happen to you anywhere.
Sure.
So... but yes, I would not be alone. I mean, after that, I would either go stay with one of the, you know, with my housekeeper at her house or stay with a friend. I'd just leave the house alone. And I would not stay there alone after that.
When you were inviting, you know, some of your regular guests over, when you had empty nights, were they aware of your ulterior motive for giving them a free night?
I don't know.
You were never like, come on over. This place is haunted as hell, and I don't want to be here alone. Free night, kids.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
I think they probably had their own curiosity in the ghost. If they knew me that well, they knew my issues there. So
that wraps up part one of our conversation with Frances. In part two, how did Frances react when her bed lifted off the ground in the middle of the night? Why did people call Frances by the name Sarah? Does Frances feel that she may be reincarnated as a former resident of the Myrtles Plantation, or is it something trying to communicate through her? And why was the Myrtles Plantation filled with such dark energy and a history of murder? Those questions and more in part two of our conversation. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Brisky. Thanks for listening.